62nd Legislative Assembly, Senate Committee on Human Services and Aging, February 8, 1983, Hearing Room A, Tape 9.
The Senate Committee on Human Resources and Aging. Senator Simmons and I will be a subcommittee until the rest of the members arrive this morning. We're going to begin with a public hearing on Senate Bill 21. You explain 21.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Prior to commencing the hearing, though, I'd like to read into the record, if I might, correspondence under date of January 26, 1983, from Ralph Groner, Commissioner of Clackamas County, in support of Gene Smith. Communication from Harvey Shabothi of the Vocational Rehabilitation Division under date of February 1, 1983, in response to questions that were raised at a prior hearing of this committee. Correspondence from Gerald Ripka, Administrator of the Callahan Center, under date of February 2, 1983, in response to requests for information from Senator McCoy. Correspondence from Leo Hegstrom under date of February 4, 1983, in response to questions posed by this committee during a prior hearing. An analysis done by the Legislative Research Office, Alan Tressider, under date of February 4, 1983, regarding four states and the appointment of the ombudsman by the legislative branch of government. In addition to that, Mr. Chairperson, we have in the packets of the members a measure summary of LC Draft 1304 relating to the Juvenile Corrections Division. This bill draft will be presented to the committee on Thursday for possible introduction as a committee bill.
Members have copies of
the members have copies, okay. So that if they have questions, they can address them to staff.
Okay. Is that it?
That's it, Mr.
So ordered, then.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, the first bill for public hearing is Senate Bill 21. This measure would permit the Senior Services Division to transfer the title of equipment to Type B agencies. It has no fiscal impact, according to the analysis done by the Fiscal Office. It has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means Committee.
Okay, the first witness here is Bob Zeigen from Senior Services Division.
Mike Fager will also.
And Mike Fager.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Bob Zeigen, Deputy Administrator of the Senior Services Division. Mr. Fager will give the primary testimony. I would like to point out that, as Mr. Ladd said in his presentation the other day, the Senate Bill 955 provides us with adequate ability to administer the program, and considering how complicated a program it is, it's quite remarkable. I would like to also note that in support of this bill, we have a letter from Mr. Sage, to Dick Ladd, who is the area agency director in the area around Marion, Polk, and Yamhill counties, and we've had verbal approval from the area agency director in the Pendleton, Umatilla area. These are the two agencies which would immediately benefit from this bill should it be passed, because they are transfer agencies and eligible. They're in support of the bill. I'd like to ask Mr. Fager to present the substance.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, this bill allows the division to transfer title to equipment to a Type B area agency, with a return to the division should an area agency discontinue the Type B status. However, the bill should be amended to specifically include motor vehicles as well as equipment. This was always the intent of the ad hoc committee who wrote Senate Bill 955, but was not accomplished when originally drafted in the 81 session. As some background information, when an area agency such as a city, county, or a municipality, such as a COG, becomes a Type B transfer agency, the division contracts a fixed amount of funds for personnel, OPE, and services and supplies to this governmental unit, and they then perform certain functions for eligible senior and handicapped clients. The government mental entity places the former SSD staff on its payroll, as well as assumes control of the facilities, equipment, and motor vehicles. However, since the present statutes refer to use, SSD cannot transfer the title to the automobiles and equipment to an area agency. State procedures require the division to maintain inventory records, perform physical counts, and pay restoration fund insurance. And this arrangement limits the flexibility of the governmental entity and creates public liability, property loss issues between the state and the local governments, as well as creating unnecessary paperwork. At the present time, two local governmental entities would be affected by this bill, and both agencies are in favor of this bill. One, Mr. Zeigen just mentioned, is Valley Senior Services Agency here in Marin County, and the other is the area agency in Pendleton. Effective July 1st of 83, it's possible that four additional area agencies will become Type B transfers, and if this occurred, this would involve a total of 23 automobiles valued at $92,000 plus $75,000 worth of office equipment, or a total of about $167,000 of motor vehicles and equipment involved in the transfer. These values are replacement cost, however, the actual values of automobiles and equipment are less than $75,000. The four agencies that would be coming on in addition to the two previously mentioned are Douglas County, Lane County, Clackamas County, and Benton Lynn counties. As I mentioned previously, to make the bill more clear, the bill should be amended on lines 9 and 10 after equipment to add the words after equipment, the words, and motor vehicles. We believe that it's reasonable to transfer the title to the automobiles and the equipment at the time of the transfer of personnel to the Type B area agency, since the local governmental entity has possession and control of the property. If there are any questions, we'd be most pleased to answer.
Yes. Legislative Fiscal Office says that there is no fiscal impact, and you just mentioned that the automobiles will come to something like $92,000.
Yes, sir. There isn't any cash impact. There is a fiscal impact if you consider the value of equipment and transferring it to another entity, so
okay.
The state is transferring some property.
All right, what about GSA's responsibility for the automobiles and the upkeep and that kind of thing?
These vehicles are owned by the division, as some state agencies have their own motor pools. These vehicles came to us from the former Adult and Family Services, and these are the ones that we maintain ourselves. We have some 70 vehicles of this type.
You mean to tell me that you have a separate maintenance operation from GSA?
No, we have control over 70-some vehicles. We also supplement that by motor pool vehicles from GSA.
I see.
Yeah, the maintenance is done wherever they're located. Most of these vehicles are out out of the motor pool cities, such as Portland, Salem, and Eugene. They're in eastern Oregon, southern Oregon, and that type.
Uh-huh.
So if there's any maintenance to be done, we go to a local garage or we get bids. And if the local, that is large repairs, maintenance is done locally.
Okay, you transfer the automobile to the agency. Their responsibility is to keep it up. Right. They also have to take care of the insurance. There is no liability at all on your part once it leaves your jurisdiction.
Under the proposal, once it is transferred, the automobiles will become their responsibility, yes.
Okay. When we talk about well, other equipment like typewriters and all the rest of the things that go along with that. We are, in essence, just transferring those over as well.
Yes, sir. The equipment goes with the people. Those were originally purchased under the federal funds that were available at the time. Part of those, most of the equipment was paid for in part by federal funds, and federal regulations usually give preference to the function that, in other words, if the function such as serving seniors transfers, the first priority would be, as far as the federal government is concerned, is for the function to take the equipment along.
Well, then why do you need a bill to do that if it belongs to them anyway?
Well, the state statutes in Senate Bill 955 relates to use. And so we are put in the position of allowing them to use it, and then we would have to maintain all the property records and so forth.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Let me elaborate briefly on that. We got an interpretation from the Department of General Services. We thought we could, with the word use, transfer it, but they told us that word doesn't allow us to transfer it. What we're trying to do with this bill is to make use, have the words appropriate to allow the actual transfer, which was, I believe, the intent when the ad hoc committee worked on the bill. So we're proposing this change to comply with the information we got from the Department of General Services, that the word use does not allow us to do this transfer.
Okay, you got this from General Services. What about the Attorney General? Is this proper?
No, we verbally discussed it. We did not get a formal opinion, and the word use is strictly just what it says. It's use of and not transfer, so it's pretty clear that we can transfer the title.
Well, we have in the legislation, the division may transfer. You have transfer in here.
In the existing legislation.
Transfer title. Well, this, this is in
yes,
paragraph that, 2 there.
Yes, sir. That is the amendment. That is the amendment in the bill itself. The Section 2 allows us to transfer it, and today we're asking to amend that to transfer both equipment and motor vehicles. Prior to Senate Bill 21, we weren't allowed to transfer.
Questions?
Mr. Chairman,
a
motor vehicle is not equipment?
No.
Not in this definition.
No.
Apparently not.
And then some of these Type B agencies are private agencies operating under contract. Is that correct?
A Type B cannot be a non-governmental entity. So it has to be a city, county, COG, or some municipality that would allow, that could qualify to become a Type B. An independent, a non-profit organization cannot be a Type B.
The line 7, it refers to agencies and corporate, other public and private agencies as to the use of services, equipment, and facilities. It would seem to me that would imply at least that there are private agencies using the services, equipment, and facilities.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Simmons, in the basic bill, it describes rather in detail the how to become a Type B and which agencies can become a Type B. And it, as Mr. Fager says, they have to have some linkage to a governmental entity in order to become a Type B agency. A nonprofit all by itself cannot become a Type B agency, and therefore you have to put the this amendment in the context of the total statute.
How tenuous can that connection be to a public agency?
The We have a contract.
Well, is that enough to make that relationship?
I guess I don't understand that.
Well, you said that the private agency has to have some connection with the public agency.
No.
That connection cannot be just a contractual one.
No. We have no, right now we have no nonprofit or private agency that is a type B AAA, and none are proposing because of the complexity. They'd have to work out something with the local governmental entity, and that is a separate issue and hasn't, while some of them have been interested, none of them have attempted this. So all of the agencies are governmental entities that are type B area agencies or contemplating to be type B area agencies.
And one more, Mr. Chairman. These 33 vehicles around the state, are they subject to the same regulations as motor pool vehicles as far as private use is concerned?
Yes.
They're not drive-home type vehicles. Then I noticed, too, that there's another part of the bill which changes the membership of the commission. Are you going to speak to that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Simmons, that's a redundant paragraph in the bill. It says the same thing twice, and all we're doing is eliminating the one of the redundancies.
Yeah, those appointments are addressed in 410.330. And, of course, and it's not necessary here, and when we proposed this amendment, this redundancy was taken out by the parties that drafted the bill.
Yes,
finished. Okay. Alan, did you have a question? Comment?
You want to amend that, to make that amendment?
Okay.
Yeah, I move that we amend Senate Bill 21 on line 9 after the word equipment by adding and motor vehicles. And also on line 10, page 1, after equipment, adding and motor vehicles.
Is there any discussion? All in favor will say aye as your names are called. Opposed, no. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hannity. Senator
aye.
Hanlon. Senator Isham. Senator Kitzhoffer.
Aye.
Senator Simmons.
Well, Mr. Chairman, before voting, I wonder if we should also amend line 7 then to put motor vehicles in to further elaborate on that.
Equipment.
It'll just be a comma motor vehicle.
Equipment, motor vehicles.
All right. In other words, if paragraph 2 needs motor vehicles to explain equipment or to augment equipment, then I would think paragraph 1 would also.
Any objections?
Equipment appears twice in paragraph 1.
No objections. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hamby. Senator Hanlon.
Aye.
Senator Isham. Senator Kitzhoffer.
Aye.
Senator Simmons.
Aye.
Senator Trow. Senator McCoy.
Aye. So ordered. So amended. I'll probably have a work session on this in a week or so. Is there anyone else who would like to be heard on Senate Bill 21? If not, the hearing on Senate Bill 21 is closed. We'll now move to Senate Bill 22.
Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 22 requires licensure of adult foster homes if the Senior Services Division pays for the care of clients. Yes, a subsequent referral to Ways and Means Committee has no fiscal impact.
Okay. Mr. Zeigen, would you come back?
Good
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Bob Zeigen, Deputy Administrator of the Senior Services Division. With me are Lucille Pugh, the Assistant Administrator for Program Operations, who will be presenting the testimony today. And to her right is Lou Deathless, who is our Program Coordinator for Adult Foster Homes and for Residential Care Facilities.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Lucille Pugh, Program Manager, Senior Services Division. I'm representing the agency in providing testimony about proposed legislation, which was introduced at our request. Senior Services Division now certifies adult foster homes, which provide care and services to elderly and handicapped individuals of the division. The standards for these homes were developed by the division and have been filed as administrative rules. The rules enable us to evaluate, certify, and monitor foster homes. For purposes of the current certification, as well as the proposed legislation, an adult foster home is defined as any home maintained by a person who cares in the home for five or fewer adults who are not related by blood or marriage, and is limited to those facilities which provide services for clients for whom the division pays for the cost of care. Adult foster homes which are licensed or certified by another state agency are excluded from the proposed legislation. The purpose of this legislation is to provide statutory authority to the division in the licensure of adult foster homes which are used by clients of the division, and to provide authority for suspension or revocation of a license. We believe the proposed legislation will strengthen our authority and ability to protect elderly and disabled persons served by the division, since it specifically enables the division to suspend or revoke a license. The proposal also provides an appeal process for the provider in the event of such actions. The proposal further permits access by the division staff to foster homes, clients, and client records. Payment for resident care may be terminated until defective situations are corrected. For the protection of client residents, the division may also arrange for them to move. There is no fiscal impact. The agency staff now assigned to certify and monitor foster homes will be used to license and monitor these facilities.
Any questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Senator Hannah.
Lucille, how many senior residents of Oregon are presently being served in these adult foster homes? You have an estimate?
870 cases or individuals.
870? 870. 870. Mm-hmm. Do we have a history of abuse, bad practices in these homes?
Yeah.
You can document or tell us about it.
From time to time, there have been problems in foster homes. We have been able to manage with those in terms of protective service. But when the occasion has occurred that a license or a certification needs to be suspended or revoked, there have been problems in a judicial procedure because we have lacked the statutory authority. And so we need that authority in order to suspend or decertify a facility.
I guess my concern is if we create another new type of license, will we discourage some of the people who are now operating these homes and operating them well? Will we get the complaint about government red tape and they'll just quit?
We do not see the process as a whole lot different than what we're now doing for certification. People are expected to complete an application. We do evaluate the facility. Much of the procedure which we now have for certification would continue in the licensure, but we would be further protected since there would be a legal process for decertification or suspension of a license. We would not see this as discouraging good foster homes.
Would this involve an increased expense to the owner of the foster home? Would
no.
the license cost something more than...
There is no license fee built into this legislation, nor would we propose such.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Okay. Senator Simmons?
Chairman, Ms. Pugh, would you like to hear a suggestion as to how your administrative expense could be reduced by one-third?
Certainly.
We have three pages of testimony here, with the last page having less than one line of type on it. Certainly there's enough white space on these other two that two words could have been added to page one or page two, resulting in the 33 1/3% saving in paper and time and of all the copies that are made of it. I would hope that you run the rest of your division in a more frugal manner than this. I'm a Scotsman. These things strike me as
We appreciate your suggestion, and as Mr. Zigon can confirm, we are dealing with getting all of our testimony in order and with similar headings, and part of this is a cost-saving effort. We're sorry.
This is typed apparently on a word processor. At least it has a justified right-hand margin.
Yes, and sometimes...
So it wouldn't be too difficult.
This is correct. Thank you very much.
Okay.
I might put the division on warning, Mr. Chairman, that every time something like this comes up, I'm going to bring it to your attention.
All right. Okay. Mr. Havlat.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Pugh, the mental health division also has some responsibilities for residents of adult foster home replacements. How does your division see yourself interacting with the mental health division under this bill?
Senate Bill 955 directed that adult foster homes, which were caring for the mentally handicapped, be transferred to mental health division. Both the clients in those homes and the facilities themselves were transferred to mental health division effective July 1st. We would anticipate that in the future they will be operating their own foster care program within guidelines which they develop, just as we will continue to operate our foster care program with respect to the clients for whom we have responsibility. Those are primarily the elderly and physically handicapped.
Yeah, Senator Kitzhaber?
I have a question on actually Section 2, Subsection A and B of the bill, dealing with the findings that would determine whether or not you issue a license. And in line 13 and 14, the home is maintained in such a way that health, safety, and welfare of any client resident is not placed in jeopardy. That's really vague. Are you going to deal with that by rule or
in our administrative rules?
What are some of the criteria that you're going to be looking for? I mean, is that going to include things like smoke alarms and fire extinguishers? And I'd be very interested in perhaps between now and the work session having a little, at least a summary of your thoughts on what it is that you're going to be looking for would help me a lot.
We can provide the information now in our rules.
Okay.
We'd be glad.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Go right ahead. You finished? No. There are no further questions? Thank you. Lynn Gardiner. Yes, Yes, would you state your name and...
Mr. Chairperson, members of the committee, my name is Lynn Godnier. I'm from Associated Home Health Service, which is located at 1715 East Burnside in Portland. I'm a registered nurse, and I'm a home health nurse, which means I treat patients in their homes as ordered by their physicians. In the course of my work, I have seen the need for and the value of adult foster homes. I've been in several adult foster homes. I know of homes which are close to the ideal, and I know of homes in which the health, safety, and welfare of the residents is placed in jeopardy, and I have examples of three such homes. The first
Pardon
home...
Me, do you report those to the health department?
I report them to the specific resident service worker and to the protective service workers.
Do they take action?
I don't know the specific action taken. They
don't report back to you, but
no.
When you go back, do you see any change?
Well, the two SSD homes, I was not allowed back in. The provider threw me out. The first home
why weren't you allowed back in?
I'll describe the specific instances.
Okay, go ahead.
The first home was an SSD home.
Not supervised nor bathing, and in the 5 months she was there, she was left to her own resources to give herself only sponge baths. She was required to give herself her own medication. She and the other resident were left in the care of a 14-year-old son on at least one occasion. On other occasions, in the care of a 14- and 20-year-old son, the 20-year-old who was spending most of his time in the garage working on his car. Insofar as activities for my mother and the other resident, there were none, except for rare trips to garage sales, which were primarily for the benefit of the owner. The residents, including my mother, were left in the car unsupervised while the owner went in for chiropractic treatments, lasting as much as a half hour on more than one occasion. The owner bathed her dogs, pet dogs, in the same tub used by the residents. My mother feared that her phone calls were being monitored, that her mail was being opened. In short, she lived in an atmosphere of fear. With respect to her monetary affairs, she was given her $25 spending allowance each month, but was asked to hold and not cash those checks for as long as 3 months. In the middle of January, my mother found out that she was being moved, and I think that the traumas of moving old people are well aware, your committee is well aware of these. The owner refused to furnish the new address or to provide any details as to the new home that they were moving to. Finally, after the move was completed, after about a week or so, the owners or the operator of the foster home moved out in the middle of the night with all of their possessions, literally abandoning all the residents there. There was one aide who did not hear them sleeping. I don't know how she would have provided for the residents in case of an emergency. She is now at the present location that she moved to. I've been there, visited both the homes. This new home has architectural barriers. There are at least 9 steps to get into the place with no handrails. An additional 4 steps with one handrail. The staff turnover has been in 2 weeks. They brought a couple in to replace the ones that left in the middle of the night. The other couple with 2 young children left less than 2 weeks, were not trained as nursing people or people caring for the elderly. And this home that she's in now, quite frankly, there is no way to evacuate 5 or 6 people with 1 or 2 people doing that. Mr. Chairperson, members of the committee, if my mother could be here today, I know she would tell this story herself, and I'm asking you to support this amendment. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, Senator Simmons.
Why was your mother in this particular kind of home?
She was living in her own apartment up until September when she suffered a seizure at home, was hospitalized, and the doctors and the social workers determined that she should not live alone.
Why was she put in this home instead of a nursing home, for example?
I can't answer that. That was a determination made by her doctor and her social worker. I was not even considered or brought into this at this time.
You had no influence at all?
None whatsoever.
Would you have been able to pay for care in another home if there had been one available?
Would I have been able to pay for it?
Yes.
I doubt it.
And you had no facilities in your own home to take care of her?
I will address this. My mother was living with us in the mid-70s, and the state social system determined that my house, my family, and five children was inadequate, and so they moved my mother into her own apartment at that time. She's been pretty much under their wing since that time.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
John Powell.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm John Powell of Public Affairs Council, 1696 State Street, Salem, Oregon, today representing the Oregon Healthcare Association. We are here today simply to tell you that we endorse the provisions of Senate Bill 22, and we also endorse the basic concepts of the amendments that were presented by Terry Rogers. We are sure that there are adequate adult foster care homes. However, many of our members who are nursing homes have a great deal of apprehension when people are removed from their home and placed in some of these facilities. And they have many stories to tell, similar to the ones you're going to hear and have heard this morning. Just speaking personally, I find it very difficult to understand a placement system and a budgetary system that will move people into facilities such as this, when, in fact, the human life and safety of these people are endangered. I would think people with bleeding ulcers and those kinds of physical ailments need skilled care. And if our system has deteriorated to the point, based on simply financial concerns of the state, to where we are actually jeopardizing these people, then I think that entire system needs to be rethought. I'd also encourage you to look at the SSD budget and the dollars that are going to be necessary to treat these people at an adequate level of care, because it simply is going to require some state dollars when, in fact, these people cannot provide for themselves. So with that, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we simply endorse this concept as one that we think is necessary.
When people were being moved back several months ago, did the association call this to the attention of anybody?
Mr. Chairman, I'm sure there have been several discussions with SSD between the association and that division as to some of these moves. The association supports a program that will get people to their appropriate level of care. But there have been concerns and disagreements over whether or not certain patients should be moved. And it is something that I think is going to require some continuing dialogue. But I want to make it clear that the association is not objecting to the relocation program in general terms. We think people should be placed at the appropriate level of care. But there are situations where we disagree with the decision of the people who made it.
All right. Yes, Senator Hanlon.
Mr. Chairman. John, an earlier witness said that the licensing procedure under Senate Bill 22 would be somewhat similar to what now occurs for the unlicensed adult foster homes. I think I have that right. But yet, that procedure apparently has permitted some adult foster homes come into being that produces the results that we've heard here this morning. Have you given any thought to the fact that maybe that licensing procedure needs to be given more attention?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hanlon, I believe there's a misconception about the current status of adult foster homes. To my knowledge, there is no license per se for adult foster homes. There is a certification procedure where certain homes are certified, which is different from, I believe, the provisions where a license would be issued, there would be cause for revocation, and there'd be an annual renewal, inspections of those facilities. So that is at least my understanding, and you'll have to ask, I think the best person to ask would be somebody from SSD as to how those are certified. But there is no license that I'm aware of.
Well, the point I wanted to raise, Mr. Chairman, was the certification procedure apparently is not adequate to prevent these complaints that we have, and I hope that the licensing procedure would be a little more complete. Of course, the ability to revoke the license is additional authority to close them down, but in the initial stages, I hope more attention is paid to the facilities and the probability that the organization will function well, and apparently it's been done in the certification process.
Mr. Chairman, there was one other thing that I believe has been brought to your attention, but the provision for some kind of access by fire inspection, it may well be necessary in the bill, too.
Yeah.
And the definitional section, I'm not sure what has to be done there to make sure it's proper, but it currently reads, adult foster home means any home maintained by a person who cares in the home for five or fewer adults who are not related to the person by blood or marriage. A definition may pick up the Marion Hotel on Monday night, if you're not careful.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. All right. Okay. Thank you. Merlin Hart.
Pardon me, before you begin, is there a Nadine Crowder in the audience? You are here. Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Chairperson, members of the committee, my name is Merlin Hart, 845 Northwest Lewisburg Road, Corvallis. In spite of the written testimony handing out to you that says I'm Hazel Carr, chairperson of the legislature. Hazel was unable to be here. I am a member of the Governor's Commission on Senior Services and also a member of her legislative committee of the Governor's Commission. So in her absence, I'm giving her testimony. By way of background, Terry Rogers did appear before at a committee meeting of the Governor's Commission Legislative Committee last week, and we spent some time going over the bill and her amendments. Senate Bill, reading from the testimony, Senate Bill 22 is a priority concern to the Governor's Commission, and we are in support of this bill. However, after reviewing the proposed amendments presented by United Seniors, we would be in support of the concepts they suggest also. The Commission's Legislative Committee is interested in the development of these amendments and the bill and would be pleased to work with the committee on refinement. A further statement would be that during the last year and a half, 2 years, as the relocation effort has been taking place, from time to time, people have come and expressed concern to the Governor's Commission and Senior Service about this, and it was identified over a year ago as a primary concern that the Governor's Commission wanted to see in legislation.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Nadine Crowder.
Members of your committee, I'm Nadine Crowder. I'm president of the Jackson County Adult Foster Homes Association, and I'm also representing Josephine County, and we have an association in Lane County, too. We are in support of this bill. There needs to be more stringent control over foster homes that are not certified or a better means of either closing them down. We've had records of abuse even in Josephine County and in Jackson County. And in our association, we attempt to provide top quality care for the people that are in our homes. And we feel very strongly against people that take elderly or handicapped people into their homes only for monetary or material reasons. And I didn't receive a copy of the bill, so really I'm totally unprepared today. But hopefully you can understand what some of these other people have been going, but you can't judge all of the foster homes by the ones that you've been hearing about, too. So we would like to see something added to the bill that would clearly define the difference between board and room or foster care, any type of care or supervision. I mean, people take board and roomers in, that's a whole different concept. And we need a definition between the two. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Marge Zink.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, my name is Marge Zink. I'm manager of a portable X-ray service in Portland. And you need the address? 123 Northeast 102nd Avenue. The line of our business takes us and our technicians to nursing homes, retirement centers, private residences, sometimes even hotels, to do portable X-ray and EKG work on the request of a physician. I only recently became aware of this bill for the adult foster homes, and I want to reinforce what you have heard from the nurse, that there are some fine ones, and there are also some that are appalling. The technicians have on occasion had to run outside two or three times when they've been trying to take an X-ray, because the odor was so terrible in the room. We've been in homes where, I don't know if you're familiar with care of elderly people, but a lot of them can't stand cold temperatures. They have to have it, you know, closer to 70, sitting there shivering, complaining. I don't always know whether it's a certified home or an uncertified home when we go there. But we do know that if this bill is to be passed, and I am supportive of it, it should be for all the foster homes, not just 10% or those that are going to be taking care of the people that are on the state fund supported system. I think it's almost our obligation to make sure that we take care of all of them. Thank you.
All right. Question? Thank you. Julie Bueller.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Julie Bueller, and I'm an intern in Senator Joyce Cohen's office, and I'm speaking in her behalf today in support of the general concept of this bill. The most essential point she'd like me to make is that, as it is now, when a complaint is made, or a report of abuse is made about a foster home, the state has no legal right of access into the home for investigation, and this bill would give the SSD access to the home and the clients and the client records. It is also important that reasonable standards be set for adult foster homes, which assure safety and care for clients. Considering there's such a great variation in the needs of persons living in foster homes, and a variation in the quality of care being provided, there really needs to be flexible rules which can accommodate the individual type of care that foster homes are giving. And by requiring foster homes to be licensed by the state, these homes would be required to maintain a standard of quality. Again, Senator Cohen supports the general concepts of this bill and feels that it can prevent foster homes from becoming centers of neglect.
Okay, thank you. Virginia Dunaway.
Mr. Chairperson and committee, my name is Virginia Dunaway. I'm a nurse and also a technician for, we do portable x-ray work as Marge's company does. We go in, our address is 11902 Southeast Star in Portland. We go into these homes also, in nursing homes, in private homes, and see very appalling conditions. Not only in a level of five or less, we see them in hotels, any adult care, and they're not really care, they're just adult living conditions, and they're just appalling. And we feel that this bill, as long as it would cover more than just the state patients, that should definitely be passed. We're very much in favor of it.
Thank you very much. Geneva Winkle.
My name is Geneva Winkle, and I'm a co-convener for the Portland Gray Panthers. The Portland Gray Panthers is very concerned that Senate Bill 22 be modified to include the amendments being proposed by United Seniors. It is common knowledge that agency staff, as well as advocates, are frustrated with the existing system, which allows abuse and neglect in adult foster care homes to go unchecked. Where the Gray Panthers have reported resident abuse and where we ourselves have made efforts to investigate such reports, we run up against a brick wall. Private paying residents, regardless of their vulnerability, have no protection at all. And even when public dollars are paid for care, advocates, protective service workers, and police are unable to enter a boarding home unless they have the owner's permission or a court order. We would like to present two cases which illustrate the need to protect all residents in adult foster care and to guarantee the access necessary to enforce minimal standards. Last winter, our nursing home hotline received a call complaining that residents of a Northeast Portland board and care home were spending their days in a nearby laundromat to keep warm because there was no heat in the house. The caller also reported that they rarely had enough blankets and were sometimes fed nothing but soup. One of our volunteers visited the home the next day and found no one inside except a single disoriented resident. The interior of the house was barren and dirty. There seemed, in fact, to be no heat, and the volunteer guessed the temperature to be between 45 and 50 degrees. When this complaint was referred to Adult and Family Services, we were told that there had been several complaints about the facility over a period of time. However, there was nothing that could be done except to encourage the residents to move out. It appeared that standards for AFS clients were unenforceable, and for private residents, they were non-existent. In a second case, a neighbor of a care facility, room, board, and care, reported that an elderly resident ran to her home after being pushed and slapped around. According to the caller, the resident appeared to have suffered some physical abuse based upon red marks on her arms and face. A 901 abuse complaint was made. The worker went out with a police officer and was told that although a resident by that name had lived there several years ago, she was no longer a resident. The owner refused the worker and officer permission to enter the home to talk to residents. The pair felt that they could proceed no further without a court order, and the complainant, living in close proximity to the home, said she was afraid to sign an affidavit. Ultimately, nothing was done. In each case, without guaranteed access, proper investigation and enforcement were impossible. Some of our most vulnerable citizens are grossly unprotected under the current system. If you choose to correct the lack of standards, you must also remove the barrier to their enforcement. In doing so, please do not overlook the equity of providing this protection to private as well as publicly funded residents. Thank you.
On the first and the second case, was there any follow-up on those cases?
Our nursing home hotline handled this, and I did not. But as I understand, they did as much follow-up as they could possibly do, and they felt that their hands were tied, that they were helpless. So, as far as I know, the homes are still operating as they were then.
I see. Yes, Senator Hamby.
And may I clarify, it was room, board, and care.
Yes.
Is that what you, not just room and board.
That's right. This was a care facility. Thank you.
Thank you. David Bonart.
My name is David Bonnert, and I operate an adult foster home in Portland at 3434 Northeast Bryce. My qualifications for such is that I'm a licensed practical nurse, and I've been practicing for over 10 years, both hospital and nursing home. I am going to support this bill. I have heard a lot of things today that I will take issue with. Number one, first of all, we just had our first meeting in Portland last week that was conducted by Adult and Family Services, where I met other owners of adult foster homes. Some of the things that I found out since then have been rather outstanding, and I really I think when legislation is passed or going to be passed that's affecting people that run these type of homes, there should be some kind of a notification system. I first found out about it on Friday, and I have been calling Saturday and Sunday all of the people that I met and I had phone numbers for, telling them that, you know, they should at least come down and find out what's going on. I take four patients. They've ranged in age from 47 to 97. There are two of us that I have a partner that runs it with me, and we staff 24 hours. And I happen to be very proud of my home and the care that we give. I wash my dog in the bathtub too, but we disinfect it after. There are some horror stories. Number one that I think people should be aware of is that some people are only getting $200 a month for board care. That's impossible. Some of the people that I've met I know shouldn't be running these type of homes, but if you're only going to give them $200 a month for their care, don't expect much, because I don't see how you can feed and take care of a person on that amount of money. And my job is 24 hours a day. We have been woken up at 3 o'clock in the morning and 4:30 in the morning to help somebody to the bathroom. I'm all in favor of regulations. There aren't any to speak of. There's a draft that we received from Adult and Family Services that has some definitions on it. We are a certified home. Well, I can't think of any other things to say except that I do support this bill, I support the regulations, but I do respectfully request that at least the people that are involved in the business are notified by all of these senior services before a hearing is held, so at least we have time to prepare.
What goes into your certification?
They come out to the house. Virginia Irby and Johnny Wright, who are work for Adult Family Services, they examine the home. look at our bedrooms. All of our bedrooms are private. The fire marshal comes out and checks the wiring, smoke detectors. We have one on every floor, fire extinguishers. There is also another list of fire protection requirements for adult foster homes housing 1 to 5 persons. It's a little scribbled up, but you know, we've had that since we've opened. Any other questions?
Well, you know the people come to visit often from Adult and Family Services and
no.
On the patients, they just...
I have on occasion, because we had a lot of problems with a patient who was dying, a cancer patient, who was dropping her cigarettes all over the place. She was on a great many medications, including morphine, Percocets, which I regulated and gave to her. But when we took the intake for this particular patient, they told us she was suicidal, and she moved in with a pistol, which we had a, you know, a big fight over. But anyway, I had asked a social worker to come out on one day because the problems were getting difficult. She was in the final stages of her disease. I was worried about burning things, setting things on fire. She was supposed to show up on a Friday. I never saw her. Patient died the next week. She went to the hospital the next day. As far as, you know, I welcome visitors anytime into my house, my home. I wouldn't like the idea of somebody showing up at 8 o'clock in the morning to inspect the premises when I'm trying to bathe people and dress them and fix breakfast. I think it's only common courtesy to call. But anyone is welcome.
Okay. Mr. Hamby.
Is your assistant also an LPN?
No, he's a certified nurse's aide with nurse's over aide. 5 years.
So an individual that might need a around-the-clock morphine or pain coverage,
yes.
The medication is administered by whom?
Myself.
24 hours. Basis?
If they were capable of managing it themselves between 12 and 6 o'clock in the morning, I certainly would prefer not to have to get up every two hours.
Mm-hmm.
But with a patient who I told was, you know, was told was suicidal, I don't